Hello, everyone. Welcome to 11th Hour. If you could take your seats, we'll get started. We have our last faculty reading tomorrow, but this is our last 11th Hour lecture, and I think we're ending on a high note. As always, if you could silence or turn off your cell phones, that would be much appreciated. And if there are questions at the end, I will carry this microphone around so everyone can hear. If you've ever been in a writing workshop, which you all have, you've probably talked about good ambiguity and bad ambiguity. The difference can be elusive, a little bit like pornography, hard to define, but you know it when you see it. Perhaps it has everything to do with Hugh Ferrer's topic today, the subtle ways that stories hold the line between conflicting forces. Hugh is a senior editor at the Iowa Review and the associate director of the University of Iowa International Writing Program. He has taught a variety of courses at the University of Iowa, introducing undergraduates to fiction writing, international literature, journal publishing, and Iowa City's literary culture. He holds an MFA in fiction from the Iowa Writers Workshop. Please join me in welcoming Hugh Ferrer.
Hey, everybody. Morning. I get really nervous before these talks. They ask you to propose a topic months in advance, and so you have to pick an idea, and you assume you can get it there. You can assume you can come up with how it works, and you know, as the day grew closer and closer, I realized I may have picked badly, and So I thought I'd focus on tension, which is also like a very, very vague term to work with. I started to think about all the things that are tense, including myself, and I realized we talk about tension in a number of ways. So if we're going to talk about tension in a poem or a story, we inherit all these other ways of talking about tension, and it makes it a really terrible craft term to use coherently. I mean, do we have any engineers in the audience? All right, what's an engineering definition of tension?
How much force the thing can take before it breaks.
How much force, okay, yeah. Other definitions from, there's a stretching, there's an elongating, there's a tautness, there's stress. But physical stresses, yes?
Conflict, opposition.
Right, so now we move into something that's slightly less physics class and more, were you thinking more psychological? Yeah, so psychologists would use it about internal forces, maybe internal conflicts. Are there other definitions of tension?
Trump care.
I don't even think that's metaphorical. I think that's all right. That's right. Yeah, so how does surface tension work? Yeah, so there's the droplet of water has an outward something, and the water has an inward something. You can see where my high school scores were. All right, other definitions of tension that?
Anticipation.
Interesting, something to do with time. There's a way in the way of what we anticipate happening. In the back.
Opposing forces.
I'm particularly fond of that one just for what we're gonna talk about today. So let's hold on to that idea. Any poets in the house who went to a bunch of workshops and got told that their work has to have the proper tension between artistic elements? Good for you. I don't. So, all right, all of those. Does that kick it on? Or did I just turn it off? No, I think I just turned it off. Yeah. All right. If this zips out, it's going to cause my hand to shake. All right, so you can see, you guys, between us, we got most of the. I take refuge in dictionaries, this is my old college one. So this is probably from the early 80s. I think it I think it would be updated more recently. But there's the act of stretching or the condition of being stretched or stiffness. The I went and looked up 1B there, stress. Is it about to die? Stress, the definition for stress had to do with deformation, which I thought was sort of lovely. It has to do when two bodies are impacting each other. We might call the tension what one body does to another. All right, well, this is all very, nobody volunteered what how electrical potential, maybe that's partly what Margaret meant, was the potential within a system. My favorite of all is this one, which is a device to produce desired tension. So attention is something that actually is designed to, So a piano I think of as a device to produce a desired tension. All right, so we had, what did we have? We had sort of, artistic concepts of tension. We had psychological concepts of tension. We had all the ways in which forces are working. I didn't get surface tension. I wish I'd thought about that, but I had the centripetal and centrifugal. And then we have sort of opposing forces. And if you use it in a binary way, you've got some sort of tug of war, some sort of face off, and then there are concepts in which tension becomes more of a web. Okay? Pretty easy. And very familiar to us. But that idea of sort of equal and opposing forces, keeping things in balance, is somehow, I'm hoping going to be valuable for us today. So I'd like you to think about either something you're working on now, something you've read recently that had a great impact on you, something you want to take refuge in from long ago because you know it very well. And I'd like you to, I want to make sure I get my phrasing right. I guess I'd like you to take a little time here and write down what you think sort of the opposing or complementary forces in it are, what the tensions in it are, if there are any fundamental tensions in it, what you think of as a tension when you think of your own work. And the categories could be very broad. As you can see, we use it in a number of ways. You could be talking in psychological terms, you could be talking in craft terms, but what do you think when you think of this work, whether it's your own or somebody else's, what do you think are the tensions in it? And you'll feel you're on the right track if you can name it in a pair. All right, as you get a couple of those notes down, really doesn't have to be too detailed. If you've already got, how many of you have already got some items done? All right, could you just go through what you've written down again and sort of just mark as many of these as you think apply to the tensions that you think you've named? Yeah. So yeah, I was thinking about. I grew up with a fraternal twin brother, and so for me, you know, the tension between characters is sort of a lifelong battle. We've divided the world between us in all things. If he was good at something, I was going to be good at something else. If he liked something, I was going to like something else. There's something, and also always because it's within a family, and you know, I mean, very, very balanced all the time. They're equal and opposing forces. It's an endless tension between us. But how you get a narrative? Thank you, Anne. How you get a narrative to actually hold that in balance? If there is a protagonist-antagonist relationship, do you want to have the antagonist have as much airtime, as much reader sympathy? Is that something you want to create for the reader, Or is that not a tension that, and the fewness of hands makes me think that maybe that is not actually as big a priority for folks, though it does create moral, it creates moral tensions, because if you have two different characters and they want opposite things and you know both of them, and that can create a lot of tension for a reader, but it's also, well, that could be morally, that could make the, morally ambiguous. You know, if you get inside the head of two characters that fully and make them both big agents of a story. What about between cultures? Joe.
Constantly tension that is created by war on the one hand, and by a struggle within each of these peoples to achieve what they want at the very end and may not be able to do so.
Great. And do you want to say a brief word about how you create the tension on the page? Do you give us characters that are on both sides of the cultural divide?
Yes, and I also work with the interiority of both sides. I want the reader to see inside these characters and to judge their actions. And all I am is a guide. All I am is the person that helps them with this little torch in these dark caves of human emotion.
Thank you. Other examples of in the...
Come on.
So I have a minor character who is half Chinese and half Irish, who's here, and the conflict or the tension is really family tension with the Chinese grandparents and the Irish grandparents putting pressure on the choice of a future wife. And the way I want to show the tension is with the interference and the subtext in the conversations and the messages from the sets of grandparents. But again, this is kind of like a subplot. So messages, and there can be some humor and misunderstandings.
But you've given your narrator the job of communicating that tension?
Both. So the tone is going to, partly the tone, which is some distance, but humor and kind of, and in part, close third with inner tension. You know, what am I going to do?
In more than one character?
In more than one character. Well, actually, primarily in one.
Okay.
Primarily in one. That would be, I think it would be a cacophony.
Yeah, definitely. I was.
Yeah.
Other examples? Oh, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, we'll get you the mic. It's putting.
Social class would be a factor.
Social class could be a way of thinking about, definitely a cultural divide and social class.
I'm a retired psychoanalyst, so the first three come easily to me, because that's how I think. As far as between cultures is concerned, I travel a lot now that I'm retired, and last winter I visited Myanmar and saw a lot of Buddhist temples, and I wrote a poem about it because I'm writing poetry now. And the way it's the way I think about things because of my background. I'm always filtering what I see out there through my own culture, my own inner experience, and there are always comparisons going on. So I think when I wrote a poem about the all the Buddhas I saw, I think I created tension in that particular poem by. A lot of description of what I saw there, what it meant in terms of what I learned, with the culture that I come from, and I think the poem created tension by having that contrast.
Great, yeah. I worry that the Buddhists would be disappointed about the tension that's being created, but they...
I didn't ask their opinion.
You didn't ask their opinion, so they're not your readers. So who did you think your readers were?
People in I guess Occidental culture.
Right. So people not familiar with that world, and you're bringing back your strangeness in that world, or that world's strangeness for you.
But the way I made that strangeness palatable or familiar by comparing it with what I'm familiar with here. Like filtering one through the other.
Yeah. Was there anything you felt you couldn't translate? Like any part of that culture you felt you couldn't translate for an Occidental reader?
I don't know how to answer that question because I only wrote about those things that I felt I could translate. So maybe I filtered out the things that I couldn't, you know. Maybe leaving an open-ended question would have added more tension. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to...
No, I understand. Yeah, I'm just thinking in terms of your subject.
Cool. Yeah, thank you. Well, it's a great example. How we encountered the... in fact, the original impetus for this was how to... That fundamental idea of culture clash, or at least encountering the strange.
Yes.
And how you, as an author, might have to get bigger in order to give both sides of the equation enough weight to feel a tension between them.
Well, that's good. I like that.
Okay. Quit while I'm ahead. Other example? On the left.
Yeah. I have a character who is lives in California, the Bay Area, and he's coming back to his mother's funeral in rural Nebraska. Where things are a lot tighter. And the people in my workshop think it's important that they know that he's gay. And I don't know if this is layers of reality or between cultures, but the culture that he lives in California, is very different. And he's having to juggle this and meet the old friends and not be exactly out. Or not have them understand. Well, he's coming back as Rock Hudson, but.
And one clarification: you said they. You meant the people in this tight-knit community he's returning to, and the readers. It's weird, the readers felt it was important for them to learn that.
To know that he's gay.
Yeah.
And I didn't write it. I mean, he is gay because it's part of a larger thing, but they thought it was important in this context to understand his feelings for coming back, to know that he's gay. And that wouldn't be, this is rural Nebraska in the 1950s, and it's not exactly accepted.
Yeah, that may not be the story. I mean, I can't tell just from afar, but I don't know that that's, it depends on the story you're telling. You know, like work that made a deep impression on me when I was trying to learn how to write was Grapes of Wrath by Steinbeck. And part of what he does there is he goes to a great deal of effort to make you understand the other forces that in the world that the Jodes are moving through. If he told everything from just the Jodes' point of view as they travel along that road, you would never be able to judge what resistance they're up against, what the, you know, but instead, every other chapter, Steinbeck jumps ahead and he gives you some other family's experiences down the road at this crossroad, at this store, at this farm, with these cops, and the results of that. And so then when the Jodes arrive, a week later, a month later, at the same crossroads, like you've been given that other information, right? So you really understand what the Jodes are up against. It's not just what the Jodes perceive. The author's gone to the trouble of sort of saying, at this gas station or these cops in this county don't like immigrants. And so you know when the Jodes arrive that it's going to be a fight, right? And that causes a certain amount of tension. I go on that digression in part because it really depends on the story you're telling. If it's important for the reader to understand that in this tight-knit community in rural Nebraska, homosexuality would be completely unbearable for others to be a party to in any way, and that when this character comes, like his not saying it or his being gay is going to be a source of, but if that's not the story you're telling, then I don't, you know, like. Absolutely, I totally agree. I mean, culture was the broadest, I mean, I chose it for its breadth rather than its specificity. I definitely wanted everybody to sort of feel like it can be heritage, it can be orientation, it could be encounters with a completely different social, religious culture, it could be class issues, it could be any number of things. But throughout all of these examples, part of what I've been emphasizing is that if you want people to feel the tension of that, you've got to do something to equal the scales and make us understand the equal and opposing forces that are creating the tension. The top three I grouped mainly because they are, they're solved by a couple, they're the bailiwick of a couple craft elements. And basically the top three are the management job of point of view and what we could also call dramaturgy, which is the sort of science of drama, you know, how you arrange your drama to create tension. So to the extent that you want the reader to feel a tension, if you want to do it between characters or you want to do it within the self, you know, these might be point of view issues. Same too with between cultures. How many of you can instantly recall a book you've recently read with multiple narrators? It's incredibly common now. It's incredibly common to see a book like Girl on the Train, where you've got three narrators. You know, I commented earlier this summer that, you know, this is not, well, you can say the novel used to be, you used to have a lot of, we used, in the 17 and 1800s, you know, there were a lot of epistolary novels, novels in letters, which in a sense might also be a kind of multiple narrator structure. But anyway, all of those are, and I think it should be fairly obvious, given the examples that we heard, how point of view and dramaturgy would take care of that. What about this bottom group? Did anybody want to, anybody mark four by one of their tensions, talk about language? Yeah. Yes, did everybody hear that? The narrative poetry workshop this week in which the teacher was suggesting the use of strong verbs, which could create tension within the language. Definitely. Did anybody want to talk about, I mean, one of the reasons I put that there is, a lot of these have to do with sort of the modern era or contemporary writing now, and a worry about how language actually does its job. Do any of you struggle with that as writers, about language not meaning what we hope it means? What do I mean? A couple things. One is I think poetry has been dealing with tensions within the language a lot, you know, in terms of meter, cadence, meaning, how you make language make more meaning. And then there's another sense of it, at least in vague terms, and I wasn't really planning, I was sort of hoping everybody would be like, no, we're not interested in that, and we could just move on. But the other part of it, and it impacts on the others, is sort of a crisis of language, which is, how do you get characters or narrators to mean what they say, or does language work the way we all hope it does? And I think there's a lot of authors out there now who have their doubts. And we have a kind of crisis at the top too, politically in this culture, obviously too, in which, you know, it's very strange to be in a country in which we have leadership whose utterances are not consistent day to day, you know, to put it as mildly and apolitically as possibly, you know, and that's double talk too, right? Like what I just said is double talk. You know, we can get very good at like not calling a spade, and we've got, you know, the company line, and we've got how we talk with our parents, and we've got how we talk with our friends, and all the different ways in which we have all these different codes that we use, and we're all very natural. As long as we've got the right context, and somebody from the other context doesn't show up and overhear us, you know, and somebody doesn't look at my Facebook feed, you know, from work and see that I have this other life and this, you know, and that they don't check my Instagram account because I have yet this other life and so on and so on, you know. So how is language in the real world, what are they actually matching up is what I... Some people focus really heavily on that in their writing. Yeah.
On that one, number four, all of my equal and opposing forces were F4, as I marked. So literally everything I wrote down was that. Yeah. I wrote down shape and chaos, and whole and ruptured, and having and loss, and grace and falling. And to me, those are all somewhat within the self, but they're also most solidly in that number four within the language, because what I'm thinking about with that, so here's an example of what I mean. So you have like a sentence. I write poetry. And so you have a sentence, and like you have like the wholeness and like the, you know, a sentence that has all the parts that you expect a sentence to have. And one of the things that I'm always thinking about when I'm writing is how I break that sentence, how I make it into parts so it's no longer whole, so that it's, you know, breaking it into lines, breaking it in places where you don't expect. So that dissolution of something being together and whole and solid and then broken up into poetic lines, and where you do that and whatnot, to me is very much tension within the language. And like I do it so much I can't stop actually thinking about that. So I don't know if that's furthering what he...
Ironic that the microphone would run out there. Thank you for the great question. That's a great question. I don't have a set answer. The question, I'm just trying to reformulate. The question is trying to create tension in the language of the piece by code switching in the dialogue, which is to say having characters who are speaking different, I think the linguists would call them idiolects or subcultural languages, but basically code switching. I wish, if you could speak up, do you have, and so do you think that's an effective way to create tension? And I think definitely it can be. I was wondering if you had an example of somebody you read for inspiration in that regard. Anyway, I've covered a lot of ground, and I appreciate everybody's input. Oh, I think she left. What was none of the above? All right, good. Then I think we covered everything. All right, thank you very much.